Our two scriptures for this Mother's Day Sunday. The first one comes from the Old Testament, Isaiah 66:13, in which God compares God's self to a mother. And the context of Isaiah 66 is that God is trying to comfort his people who reside in Babylon in exile and will be returning soon to the Holy Land, which they were driven from when Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem in 587-586 BC. Isaiah 66:13, as a mother comforts her child, so I will comfort you. Our New Testament reading comes to us from 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58. Paul's writing to the church he founded, and in the 15th chapter, he talks more about resurrection than in any other place. He tries to explain to his brothers and sisters that they need not fear death because they will be transformed in the twinkling of an eye, and that indeed life in heaven is greater than even the best life here on earth. And yet he becomes practical at the end of this chapter. And I love this because I think the best mothers embody Paul's words. Hear now the apostle. Therefore, sisters and brothers, my beloved, be steadfast, immovable, always excelling in the work of the Lord, because you know that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Amen. This marks Mother's Day today. May 8th is a special anniversary for me because my mother was born on May 8th, 1912, and I believe this is the first Sunday in which May 8th has fallen in my long career as a minister, and so I would like to talk about mothers, but specifically I would like to talk about my mother. I lost her when I was 38, nearly half a lifetime ago, and she died of liver cancer, of which I will say a bit more of. But in many ways, she was the person who informed and influenced my life the most. And so it behooves me to talk about all of you mothers, but to really focus on my mother, who I think is representative of the best of what motherhood is and what mothers have to offer. And when I think of my mother, I think of Paul's words, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. She was steadfast and immovable in a positive way. And when I say steadfast and movable, she was positive inasmuch as she overcame a terrible childhood. She was literally born on the wrong side of the tracks. I remember as a little boy visiting her family home and realized that the front lawn was soot-tinged because maybe 30 or 40 feet away was a railroad track. And indeed, the problem for my mother was, although she never drank, smoked, and everything was coated with wheat germ, she nevertheless died at 74 of a liver disease, which the oncologist said was probably caused by the fact that the water table had been influenced negatively by benzene, which would have accounted for her death and also the death of her younger sister at 54 of leukemia. So I'm aware of environmental pollutants because I lost my aunt and I lost my mother because they lived very, very near to the wrong side of the track. My mother had other problems too, and that was family problems. Her father was a painter, worked little, and he was an alcoholic. My grandmother tried to raise her three children, but was addicted to codeine, as many people at that time were. And because the family was in a state of turmoil, and because her younger siblings could not be controlled or nurtured or cared for by their parents, my mother dropped out in eighth grade in order to take care of the family, to make it at least as functional as it possibly could be. Nevertheless, I never thought of my mother as a school dropout because she was an avid reader, she was self-educated, she took an interest in everything and everyone. And I know she went through tough times, although she said very little about those tough times. I remember once, though, I asked her what her life was like as a teenager, I guess when I was a teenager, and she said, well, she was going through a real bad period when she was 17 years old, and she encountered, walking along Main Street, the estimable Reverend Dr. Albert Dodd Wyckoff, who was pastor of the Spring Valley Reformed Church at the time. And he saw her coming, and I guess she couldn't hide her feelings, and she explained to him. She didn't explain to me because parents did not do that to their children. That greatest generation were kind of tight-lipped and closed-mouthed, and that was okay, wasn't it? But she explained to him the problems she was dealing with. And he said to her, well, Mildred, you always will have your faith. And, you know, just a simple statement like that goes against kind of my academic and mental health pedigree, which says, you know, simplisms like that really don't help. But it's exactly the anodyne my mother needed to hear. Mildred, you will always have your faith. And from then on, she was positive and hopeful. In spite of the fact, again, as I mentioned earlier, she lost her sister of leukemia at age 54. Her sister had gotten out of the family home, I think engineered in part by my mother, and had married someone who was director of the San Diego Zoo. So if you go to the San Diego Zoo today, the Schroeder Monkey Pavilion is named in honor of my aunt's husband, Charles Schroeder. And also, my mother had to take care of her younger brother, Ray. And Ray was brilliant. He was a ham radio operator at a time when few could master that trade, and he did it on his own. And he escaped the family by going on cruise ships down south to South America. And I have black and white photographs of him in his starched white uniform and white cap. And what I saw was a man who was confident and happy. And also I saw that he was in company with many local Hispanics, which I took for people who were mayors and people who were dignitary in the various ports that the ship came into. So the problem for Ray, however, was that his family was very, very poor, and he took all of his savings and sent it back to the family home on Hoffman Street in Spring Valley, New York. And then there was a radio operator's strike, and he couldn't afford to go on strike. So he continued to work, and one day when he was at home, when he was off the ship, a few union organizers paid a call on my mother's family. They tied my grandmother and mother up in one room, and they beat my uncle to a bloody pulp in another. My mother believes he was never the same after that. Whether that was the etiology, whether that was the cause, who knows? But I do know that my uncle was in and out of Rockland State Mental Institution, I would see him on occasion riding a bike up to visit us about 10 miles away in Hillcrest, a suburb of Spring Valley, and he had that oversized smile which indicated that something was not right. Finally, he escaped the institution. He convinced them he was fine. He settled in the family home where no one else was, and he decided that he was going to board up the house. And my mother and I, Uncle Ray and my father didn't get along, my mother and I would go there every Saturday to see how he was, and he would never let us in. He would say, I am working. And what I would see as I peered through one of the windows was that he had these scrap 2x4s, and he was kind of putting them together as almost like wall decorations in the living room and other places. And I often thought that maybe what he was trying to do was relive the happiest moments in his life when he was on board ship, and that maybe what he was trying to create was miniature ships, and that he was decorating the home with those. My Uncle Ray either got sick and died in the home, or he committed suicide. My parents were really unclear, at least to me, when they talked about his passing. So my mother went through a great deal, but she never thought of herself a victim, not once, not any day. She never felt sorry for herself. In fact, when I think of her true victimization, she just turned that on its head to help and identify with others who were suffering. She never looked at herself as a victim, but she had an intense and great concern for those who truly were. And it was not simply on an individual level. It was also corporate as well. I remember when I was in college and my father and mother had just retired to Ocean Grove, where the three of us, I'm an only child, spent summers. And I called my father and said, "Where's Mom?" And I said, "I'm worried because there are riots, race riots, going on in Asbury Park, and Asbury Park is contiguous to Ocean Grove." And I said, is Mom right there?" And he said, no, she's not. She's at the Grand Union in Asbury Park." And I said, "What?" And he said, she's shopping in Asbury Park as the fires are going up and as the barricades are going up and whatever happened there." I kind of forget the details, except I was mightily concerned with her well-being. And my father said, "Oh, don't worry about her. She just wanted to know. She wanted to tell in no uncertain way to her African-American brothers and sisters that she was on their side and she was supportive, and that's why she was doing her food shopping in Asbury Park rather than in safer neighborhoods." So she was neither a victim, she never felt sorry for herself, but she used her victimization to help other people. I have a friend who's a minister, and his mother was also steadfast and immovable. And he always would cry out when he was in trouble, "Victoria," and then his mother's maiden name. And that gave him the strength to do for others who needed his ministrations and love and concern. And also it gave him the strength to witness to Christ and to do some of the tough things he needed to do. So be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. That's what good mothers are. They are immovable. They are a rock, a pillar in the midst of life's storm. And we know that because often, even as adults, we need our mother's concern. And so often when I was growing up, my teen years and 20s, I would dump things on my mother and then feel better about my life and go on, knowing that she could take it. At least I thought she could, and indeed I know she could. The second thing I want to say is that Isaiah passage from Isaiah 66, comfort, as a mother comforts her child, God says, "So I will comfort you." He's speaking corporately to the children of Israel who are in exile, as I said, but he's also speaking to you and me as well. And often that comfort takes the tactile form. Jesus says, "As a hen protects her chicks, so I would love to have protected you," he says to the recalcitrant folks in Jerusalem. So we're not good at self-soothing, are we? That's not one of our strengths. Recently, I lost my wallet as I prepare for this undertaking, the sabbatical. I'm getting nervouser and more nervouser. And I lost my wallet. And, you know, I wish that I could have heard my mother's voice saying, "Look, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay." And indeed it was, sooner than I wish it had been. But I had gone out to dinner, and I had put the plastic plate of leftover food in the refrigerator with the wallet beneath it. So I had to go and get a new credit card and a new driver's license before I found it. Thank goodness, though, I didn't have to go through the whole process. But I know that had my mother been here, she would have comforted me with a word or two or a hug, and that's indeed all I need. I remember visiting someone in the Hudson Valley Senior Residence. She was a woman in her late 80s or early 90s. And I was up to visit my father, who resided there and at the time. And I passed her, and she was weeping. And I said, I had my clerical collar on. I said, is there anything I can do? And she said, no, thank you for asking, but there's nothing you can do. I'm just so sad, and not even a minister or no one can help. I said, nothing would help? She said, well, yes, something would help. And that would be if I could only crawl up on my mother's lap once again and be comforted. If only I could crawl up on my mother's lap once again and be comforted. I have a friend who's a Buddhist, and he's fond of taking like week retreats, silent retreats, and he's a very good Buddhist, but one of the interesting things that happened to him was when he was on one of these week-long retreats, right when it finished, and he was in a state of not a nirvana, I don't think you ever reached that, but he was in a very relaxed and mellow state, and he felt he got it all right until he realized that he had locked his keys into the car, and he could not get it. He could not get the keys. And then he's a man in his 50s, and his mother has passed, but he said, you know, all of my training went out the window, and I was in a panic. And he thought to himself, the only thing that'll help me is if I had my mother here once again, and she would say, there, you know, the state police are going to be here, they'll take care of you, you'll get your keys again, just relax and have something to eat. Because one of the ways that mothers comforted us, my mother did, was made sure we had enough comfort food to eat, right? That anything could be solved with a lamb chop or a pork chop or a helping of macaroni and cheese. You know, that's all you needed. Faith in God and macaroni and cheese, and you'd be just fine. So mothers had that wonderful ability, I think, as God does for us, to say the world's not going to come to an end if you lose your wallet, if you lose your keys, whatever. The world is not going to come to an end, and mothers were always, the best mothers were always good at preventing us from globalizing a problem, from catastrophizing a problem, and from indulging in great bouts of self-abnegation. Mothers always realized, mine certainly did, that the harshest critic for me was indeed me. And she tried to encourage me, and Paul talks about the wonderful aspect that we can perform for one another, whether we're mothers or not, and that is to encourage one another, that is a fundamental in the Christian faith. And finally, the final thing I'd like to say, because May 8th is Ascension Sunday, and we remember that Jesus kind of rises from the earth to heaven, wherever that is, and the disciples don't want him to go. In many ways, Ascension Sunday is like Resurrection Sunday, when Mary kind of throws her arms around Jesus, and Jesus says, don't hold me, I have to go, I have to move on. And I think great mothers love us enough, embrace us enough, give us the confidence we need so that we can go forward in life, even without them. In other words, just as Jesus comforted disciples, but he also left them, a good mother knows that at some point we have to move out on our own. But we can do that because we have been loved enough. We can do that because we've been encouraged enough. We can do that because a mother's love never ends, and it's like a guiding light, a lodestar, which follows us all the days of our lives. So, you know, often people say, are you a mama's boy? And I often say, you bet I am. Or are you a mama's girl? And I hope you will respond, you bet I am. And if I have the resilience and strength and self-confidence and the ability to get through tough times and great challenges, it's because I was nurtured and loved by my mother. There was a couple who wanted to get married, and they came to me for counseling some years ago, premarital counseling, and the man had a close relationship with his mother. I knew his mother, so she wasn't overbearing by any means. She loved her son. But I think the bride-to-be was jealous of that. And she said to him in one of our sessions, she said, "Don't think I'm going to treat you like your mother treated you. Don't think you're gonna get that." And so we planned the wedding, and then he called me a week later and said, "We're not gonna get married." And I said, "Why not?" He said, "Well, I'm looking for someone who will treat me the way my mother treated me, with respect and love and encouragement and kindness and all those wonderful Christian attributes that my mother showed to me and allowed me to be a success in life. I don't want to be married to someone who's pulling me down or making invidious comparisons between herself and my mother." So, on this Mother's Day, forgive me for talking about my mom, but she was the best. And if I'm in this pulpit, it's because of her. And I said she died when I was 38 years old. And one of the last things she said to a nurse or physician who came in, and she was very weak by that time, but she said, "This is my son, Robbie, and he's a minister. And I'm so proud." Well, I'm so proud to have had a mother like Mildred Elizabeth Wolf Graham. Thanks be to God for those special people in our lives. Amen.